And tonight on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to talk about good advice from bad people. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Good advice from bad people. Selective wisdom from murderers, stock swindlers, and Lance Armstrong. Wow. Zach Bissonette with us. Zach, of course, is the New York Times best-selling author of that book, Good Advice from Bad People. He lives in New York City. He is currently working on a book on the story behind the Beanie Babies mania of the 1990s. And the man who became a billionaire creating those toys. Zach, welcome to Coast.
It is so cool to be here. This is my dad's favorite show. So that's absolutely really cool.
That was Ty Warner, by the way, was the Beanie Babies guy, wasn't he?
He was, who was just pleaded guilty to tax evasion.
Got probation, I hear.
He did.
How about that? He made these little things started in a condo in Illinois, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and he parlayed that starting out of nothing into the largest personal fortune in the history of the American toy industry.
Isn't that amazing?
It is an incredible story. You know, what made it so interesting to me was that people bought these. I don't know if you remember, people bought these for investment. That was primarily what drove it, was people thought they were going to get rich buying these discontinued Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
So the story of how that happened was really what got me into it.
And they made labels incorrectly on purpose and things like that.
You know, people thought it was on purpose, but it actually wasn't. That was one of the things I learned researching it, was that it was sort of this incredible accidental genius thing where these sort of weird mistakes made.
Well, we've got to get you back when that book is done, too.
Well, thank you. I would be honored.
Because I have a feeling people will call you with their Beanie Baby experience.
I'm worried about that.
So tell me a little bit about good advice from bad people.
So the idea of good advice, you know, so about a year ago, I had this kind of thought that it's just gotten way too easy to become a trusted authority in America, and that so many of the people that the mainstream media and the political class and the business world tells us are experts are sort of complete frauds. So I put together, it's really a humor book, Good Advice from Bad People, where I took this sort of sage advice from these people the media and the culture told us were these heroes that we should listen to. So I have the advice, and then I juxtapose that with these sort of stories of how these people actually live their lives.
Do as I do, not do as I say, not as I do, I guess.
Exactly. That's sort of the idea, but that taken to sort of an irrational extreme and just sort of page after page of these complete sort of charlatans.
These people, I mean, what are they trying to prove by doing what they do and you know, taking the moral high ground in public in just being disasters, Elliot Spitzer being one of them, okay? And you in New York, perfect example.
Who lectured about the importance of, the quote I have from him in the book is he talked about the importance of making New York as ethical as the people who live there, which, you know, I live in New York, and you could say that by some measure he succeeded in that regard. You know, but yeah, so I mean, so what are they trying to pull? I think it varies. To me, what's interesting is there's so much, I think a lot of projection, sort of in the Freudian sense, I guess, of these people, you know, who have this terrible impulse inside them that they're ashamed of. And so, you know, they sort of project that onto other people and go around warning other people about the, you know, exact same sort of human foibles that they are more prone to than anyone else.
What fascinates me, Zach, is how they're able to convince so many people that, you know, that they're the right ones, that, you know, they take the moral high ground, that they've got the integrity, and people fall for it.
Well, right, and I think it's because there's no vetting. You know, ideally, becoming sort of a hero to the children of America, you know, would be this regimented process, you know, akin to, you know, becoming a karate master or something, where there would be lots of tests, you know, and you would, you know, sort of gradually advance up the ranks until you became a hero. And instead, the way that it works is that, you know, if you have some kind of talent, you know, a certain smarmy charisma, and you get on television and tell people how wonderful you are, that's often all that it takes.
Well, you know, like Bill Clinton, here's an example. President of the United States, doing stupid things. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, he's human being, and he's subject to those frailties and those problems.
But him more so than most.
but come on, don't you, I mean, what pushes someone who has achieved that kind of prominence to be so stupid?
Do you think there's like a self-destructive impulse,
yes,
in these guys that they know they're frauds and want to undo themselves?
They want to get caught deep down inside, or they want to do something so reckless.
I always thought that was the case with Spitzer, where, and Clinton too, where the conduct was so stupid. I mean, it's like this guy could not possibly have thought he was going to get away with it.
It was outrageous.
It was.
You know, and I've heard stories since about, you know, Hollywood actresses with Clinton.
Really?
Specifically one. I'm not going to mention her name. And I mean, just unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, it's bizarre. I am friends with a friend who knows Prince Albert real well from Monaco.
Oh.
And they would take a private jet to Monaco, and Bill Clinton would be on that jet, probably not as president, but as later on. And I mean, he told me all kinds of stories about this guy. So I think you're right. They want somehow to either be discovered, or they want it to collapse, but I still think they think they're Teflon.
Well, I think a lot of them are such narcissists that they're unable to see themselves as hypocrites. And I'll give you an example from the book, which was William Bennett, who you might remember was the Secretary of Education under Ronald Reagan. And he wrote a book called The Book of Man, Readings on the Path to Manhood. And he said, while we all need rest and relaxation, it becomes very easy for leisure to descend into slothfulness, laziness, and irresponsibility. Exercise your mind and your body in responsible and fulfilling ways. And he wrote that, and then he did a book called The Book of Virtues, and he went around doing all these speeches and talk show appearances about how to be sort of a moral, sort of neo-Victorian kind of archetype of a responsible man. And then in 2003, it broke that he had lost more than $8 million gambling in Las Vegas in like 5 years. And what was amazing to me about it, my favorite part of this whole story, was Bill Bennett's explanation was that he said, I didn't gamble, quote, the milk money. And he said that he could afford his 8-digit gambling losses. And I was like, dude, you could afford them because you were making $50,000 per speech on how to be a responsible man.
Exactly.
But he, you know, and kind of amazingly, that dented his credibility for a little while. But he is still on, you know, still on talk radio, still doing books. And there are still people
still doing his things. Well, I'll admit, I've been to Vegas once in a while. I've had my fun. I've lost at the tables. I've won at the tables,
yeah,
but not $8 million, that's for sure.
And you also aren't a neo-Victorian moralist.
I mean. No, far from that. Well, how did you select the topic? How did that come to you?
You know what? It was really, it was, see, I don't know if you remember it, but a couple years ago, there was this guy who had been featured in that book, The Secret, James Arthur Ray.
Yeah.
And he had been on Oprah as this sort of self-help expert.
He'd been on my show.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He was a guest. He was a pretty good guest.
Yeah, you know, very well-spoken, you know, smart, funny, charismatic. And then he did a sweat lodge retreat, and a few people died retreat, and he ended up in prison, and now he is back out, still doing his motivational speaking thing again, I guess without the sweat lodge, I hope.
Yeah, let's hope he's learned.
Yeah, we would hope so. And, you know, so I don't know, I guess just seeing how this guy had been able to rise, you know, to become someone that people trusted. And then I just, you know, started sort of looking around and finding, you know, all these other really, you know, and to do this book, I read, you know, probably 300 plus out of print self-help books by people who were either, you know, incarcerated or dead of drug overdoses.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Zach. Now, I mean, not only do you have to look at and question the advice from, as you say, bad people.
Yeah.
But what about the people who take the advice that they seem to believe this?
Right. And I think that this is where, and it's one of the reasons I was so eager, I was telling publisher, pitch the show, pitch Coast to Coast, pitch Coast to Coast, is that, you know, this is really, I think, comes down to evaluating sources and advice independently and not being so taken in, you know, with cults of personality where you just sort of glom onto one person and believe whatever they say, and kind of listening to disparate sources, some that other people would consider credible, some that other people might not consider credible, you know, and making up your own mind about each thing, and not, you know, in the failing that I think people who, you know, in the book I did, you know, was the people I think made men into gods and sort of just became way too trusting of this one charismatic leader.
When you look at these people, they seem to always bounce back, though, don't they?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, one of the people I had in it said, you know, God will bless your marriage to the degree to which you are obedient to his covenantal design. If you disobey the terms of the covenant, your marriage will fail. And that was Ted Haggard in his book, From This Day Forward, Making Your Vows Last a Lifetime. And then about 2 years after that book came out, he was caught with crystal meth and a gay hooker. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And, you know, lost his church, huge fall from grace. But a couple of years later, he's back with a new church. He's still married. He's, you know, and he's, you know, he's rebuilt himself, which in a way, good for him. But no, I mean, it is kind of interesting how I think once people buy into, you know, sort of identify with one of these personality leaders, it becomes very, very difficult for them to kind of detach, even when the evidence that the person is not someone they should be following becomes overwhelming.
Who was the congressperson from your neck of the woods who just got in trouble a few years ago for sending sexual text messages?
Anthony Weiner,
that's right.
Yeah, you know, yes, and he, you know, has tried to make a comeback. I think, you know, when everyone was always, why is Anthony Weiner trying to make, it's like the guy's a narcissist, he needs the spotlight. You know, the same reason that he needs to post his penis on Twitter is the reason that he needs to run for office and be on television all the time. You know, it's all kind of
yet
related.
Some of those people will succeed.
Absolutely.
People will vote for them.
Yes.
I mean, the mayor in Toronto, I don't know what's going to happen to him, but, you know, people tend to overlook. It's almost as if, Zach, that the more hideous it is, the crazier the story, yes, the more of a celeb they become, and it just enhances their career.
Well, no, and Anthony Weiner did that. I mean, I don't know if you noticed it, but I remember, you know, noticing in the media coverage that when, you know, when that story broke with him having posted it on the internet, you know, I feel like the conflict for him was not the end of his career. The conflict for him was, you know, well, God, my career is ending, but I'm getting all this attention. I mean, I think that was the conflict for him was, you know, that he was, I think he was secretly basking in how, and now everyone wanted to talk to him now that he was sort of falling from grace. But I think in some of them, like in Rob Ford's case, I think what saves him a little bit is that he's been so upfront about what a kind of, you know, degenerate he is. But, you know, the one thing you can't say about Rob Ford is that he's a hypocrite.
I guess if you don't deny.
Right.
And you just come out and say, yeah,
probably when I was drunk.
I did this or that, or I had this problem when I was younger. I did that. Rather than deny. You know, I didn't inhale. I didn't have sex with that woman. you know, maybe people are more apt to accept you.
Yeah, I think, you know, and the guys who, I will say, and by the way, in my book, Good Advice for Bad People, it is mostly guys for whatever reason.
And they're really not bad people, right?
Most of them are not bad people. Most of them are people who I think thought they were a little better than they were, you know, or had people convinced that they were a little better than they were. But no, I mean, many of them are people who sort of, you know, just flew a little too close to the sun, I think.
and their wings melted.
They have wings of wax. Yes, exactly.
Gossamer wings. I remember that.
Absolutely.
We're with Zach Bissonnette, his book, Good Advice from Bad People. What do you see as probably one of the most hideous stories out there in terms of somebody who just fell by the wayside?
You know, my favorite, one of them, you know, I got to go with, he's a little bit obscure, but he had, you know, a big following in his own way, and that is Ernest Garlington, who wrote a book that was popular at the time called Roots of a Man, Seven Principles for Growing Strong and Powerful. And he said, what appears to be homicide is essentially suicide. Disrespect is used as an excuse to become violent. Manhood should not be equated with being able to beat someone down. or pack a 9mm, and then he is now in prison for hiring a hitman to murder his wife's ex-husband's father. So, you know, and this was a guy who was preaching about nonviolence, and I think by all accounts doing, you know, a lot of good work counseling people in inner cities on kind of alternatives to, you know, to gang activity and that kind of thing, and then he fell into it himself.
Well, you know, generally, you know, people are people. They're human beings. And then, you know, we've heard stories of, you know, John Kennedy and you know, Martin Luther King and all of them, you know, great men who electrified America, who had their own little hangups and their own little issues and stuff like that. But, you know, by and large, they kept them kind of private, didn't they? In those days. Now you can't. It's everywhere. I mean, you know, not to dwell on the L.A. Clippers story of late, you know, racism on the owner. But, I mean, the guy was taped. I mean, first of all, you're going to say something that stupid. Make sure you're not being taped.
Yep.
And I mean,
ideally don't say something that stupid, but no, I totally agree with you. You know, and it sounds like his girlfriend kind of sold him out on that.
Why would she be taping it? You know, was she going to extort him later? Who knows?
I wondered, you know, but
who knows? But, you know, so that question is has technology, Facebook, social networking, all this, has it made it easier for these people on top to topple?
I think so. I mean, it certainly, I mean, partly because, you know, I mean, with you know, with the social media stuff, if you, you know, if you're someone who thinks a lot of stupid thoughts, you
and
can
you
get those stupid thoughts in front of the public much more quickly than you could not that long ago. You know, you don't have to go through editors and, you know, you don't have to go through bookers and TV censors and that kind of thing. You know, you just post your stupid thoughts, or in Anthony Weiner's case, your stupid photo on Twitter, and there goes your career. So it certainly seems to be that's impacted it.
How many of these icons have fallen, have done something that was embarrassing for them, and things just change? I remember, I don't know if you're old enough, Zach, Gary Hart, when he was running for president.
Sure, who told them, follow me around and you'll see that I'm not cheating on my wife. That was really...
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, it's almost as if all those people have done things.
Yeah, you know, I think this goes to a little bit, because, you know, and is that the kind of people, you know, there was a psychiatrist who looked at the top careers. He did this extensive study of the top careers for people with an antisocial personality disorder, or psychopath, sort of the synonym for that. And what he found was that some of the top careers for people with this very serious personality disorder, they tend to be spotlight-seeking leadership roles. So he found politicians, corporate leaders, motivational speakers, that, you know, so these leadership roles, and it's not to say that everyone who becomes a leader is a psychopath, of course, but leadership roles do attract a disproportionate share of our population psychopaths, and I think people should try to remember that.
I think you're right. You talk about relationship experts, you know, and the fact that there are 13.5 million relationship books that have been sold every year, yet these people who give the advice, have they been there before? I mean, have they failed? Have they succeeded in their own relationships?
No, I mean, two of the most famous relationship experts, and a lot of people don't know this anymore, you know, Dear Abby and Ann Landers were pseudonyms for Pauline Esther Phillips and Esther Pauline Freeman, who were identical twin sisters. And so one became Ann Landers, and then the other followed that as Dear Abby. And they had a horrifically bad relationship. They were not on speaking terms for most of their lives.
With each other. Unbelievable.
Right. Yep.
Stay with us, Zach. We're going to take this quick break. Come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Zach Bissonette. Plus, maybe your stories. Somebody that you witnessed who had the world by its tail and then fell. We'll be back. And Zach Bissonette with us. Somebody just called me from Montecito, California, left a little message. They were just driving past the Beanie Baby mansion, they said. How about that? Small world, huh? But anyways, we'll be back with Zach next hour. We'll take calls with him right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Zach Bissonette with us. Good advice from bad people. So a lot of these people, Zach, think that they're just untouchable. That's the mistake I think they make, huh?
Yeah, there's definitely a big hubris element.
Oh, I've lost you on your phone there, Zach.
Can you hear me now?
You're really muffled.
Is that it?
I tell you what, why don't we call you right back, all right? Let's do that. We will call you back and get you back. And if that doesn't work, Trish, get him on his backup cell phone. But try the regular landline first, and we'll try to get him back on. That was kind of muffled. It's always wondered what it would be like to be doing a whole interview like that. Not easy. So we'll get him back. It'll happen. A fascinating book, though, about how these people have just done so many incredible things in their life to get the fame and notoriety. And then all of a sudden, bang, the bottom simply falls out. And it happens to almost all of them. I would think Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, might have been one of the few people where he was unscathed, other than the horrible situation that ended his presidency, and that was the Iranian hostage takeover of our embassy. But that would just be a disaster. So do you think you got him now? Let's go back. Zach, let's see if we got a better connection with you.
Is this all right?
Much better. Much better.
Awesome.
Yeah, you sounded like you were on the bottom of the ocean.
That's not good.
No, not at all. See, somebody in some high-level place knew you were talking to me about this, and they got to the phone company.
Exactly.
That happens. That happens. So, anyways, I was asking you, I mean, do you think they were this way when they were kids, that they did anything they wanted because they thought they could get away with it?
I think it starts out with a little bit of that, and then as the positive feedback from the adoring public comes in, that gets magnified. I mean, I don't think, someone like Clinton or Gary Hart sort of started out as cocky as they got. I mean, but I think it, probably an element, and then it's reinforced by feedback, right?
So we didn't have in the old days, we didn't have TMZ, but I'm convinced... FDR probably did some silly things. Winston Churchill probably did. I think they probably all did. But, we weren't in the technological era where that kind of information would be so readily available to people as it is now.
No, absolutely. No, it's a lot easier to fall from grace.
I mean, now you've got cell phones. They can take your picture. They can record you. And as you were saying, they post stuff on social networking, which can get you in trouble. It's incredible. So the media nowadays, and they're pretty savvy to all this, aren't they?
They're definitely spending a lot of time trolling, looking for people to screw up. I mean, with Anthony Weiner, I think that picture he posted had been up for a few seconds before he deleted it. But, just enough time for the reporters who were following him on Twitter to grab a screenshot of it. Yep.
They sure did. Anyways, we were talking about the relationship books and how there are so many out there, yet the people themselves, do they have that kind of experience to do this? I was raised a Catholic, but I got to tell you, Catholic priests giving married couples information and advice on marriage. I even as a kid, Zach, I just didn't get it. I kept saying to my parents, for example, I said, how can they do this with people when they've never been there? They've never been married. How do you give advice
to them? It's amazing how few people seem to pick up on that with the Catholic Church.
Yeah,
I mean, it's only the most obvious question, right?
I mean, you want to give me spiritual advice? Okay, I'll listen, but you can't give me advice on a relationship or marriage. You've never been there. And, and until you've been in that situation, I don't think you can give that kind of advice.
I totally agree with you. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting is a study, I talked about this a little bit in the book, you know, that psychotherapists don't have a lower divorce rate than the public at large. Marriage counselors don't have a lower divorce rate than the public at large, even though you would think that they actually would, just because, you know, by virtue of their profession and the credibility that they need, that there would be so much pressure on them not to get divorced because it would ruin their credibility and their career. But, you know, it doesn't. No, I mean, and that's sort of one of the things, is that having an expertise in a topic and knowing the right thing to do, you know, often doesn't seem to lead to better behavior by the people. You know, the being able to write beautiful self-help stuff does not seem to correlate with being able to sort of live it.
How difficult was it for you to research this topic?
There was an endless number of people. I mean, the funny thing, I was telling someone this, that, you know, I mean, I have in my apartment here a closet full of out-of-print self-help books by people. You know, I have, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Jerry Sandusky, the Penn State.
Oh, yeah. He's been put away.
Yes, he did a book in 2001, a sort of self-help memoir called, and I swear I'm not making this up, it was called Touched, the Jerry Sandusky Story.
Oh, man.
You know, and he said that the most important thing you could do in your life was find a way to reach out with the loving, caring hand of concern and touch other people. It was actually in his book, it was verbatim. You know, so that book, I think that was my biggest expenseless book. I think I paid $200 for that.
$200?
You know, it's out of print.
All those out of print.
Lot of,
yeah, that'll do.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of a ghoulish little collectible, I guess.
And you bought it after his episodes?
I did. I bought it. Yeah.
Before, you probably could have bought it for $5.95. Before.
No, I think it would have been the best investment you could have made over the past 10 years would have been Jerry Sandusky.
And then read the book, and then sell it. Sell it back on eBay.
Absolutely.
Well, you know. It's almost as if, is it safe to say, or accurate to say, that almost every person of fame and notoriety like that screws up or is going to screw up somehow? Or is that not fair?
I think that it's your point that, you know, when you set yourself up on this pedestal of human righteousness that no one can ever really approach, you're kind of destined for a fall. I mean, is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
You know, the people are not perfect, and then when you go and tout yourself as perfect, you're kind of begging for, you know, for a fall from that.
I mean, I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. I've made huge mistakes in my life. I've been up, I've been down, I've been over and out. It's a song, isn't it? I mean, but
absolutely.
I've...
Absolutely. Sinatra, good song.
But, you know, and I don't make any bones about it, but, you know, people who become, you know, so influential with other people, that to me is exactly the core of what you're looking at, you know, those kinds of folks.
Right. And, you know, and part of it, you know, to quote one of them, is, you know, she said, we need to learn to have realistic expectations and let people off the hook. By giving people room to be human, we can avoid a lot of heartache. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Is sort of recognize that these gurus are destined to not be totally perfect. But what's interesting about that quote is that is from Victoria Osteen, who is the wife of mega pastor church Joel Osteen. And shortly after she wrote that book with that advice about letting people off the hook, she was arrested for assaulting a flight attendant because she was upset that the flight attendant had spilled a drop of water on her armrest in first class.
remember the Jim Baker?
Baker is in my book, yes.
In the Tammy Faye situation, right? I mean, that collapsed around him.
Well, right, and my favorite thing about that, it's, I think, actually the most self-serving thing I've ever heard anyone say in my whole life, was that when that was collapsing, Jim Baker at a press conference said, you know, if you can't forgive Jim and Tammy, then the whole world is doomed to hell. So all of a sudden, you know, after he had, you know, stolen money from retirees, you know, with this timeshare scam, you know, all of a sudden, if we couldn't forgive him, it was like our fault. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. But, and sort of to your point about these guys recovering, he is now back with a new church in Branson and a big theater and his own TV show again, and the people come.
Well, that's the place to be, Branson, Missouri. You know, go down there, and open that up, and do your thing. And you're right. If you build it, they will come. It's like Field of Dreams.
Absolutely.
What does that tell you, though, Zach, about people, about their psyche, to allow this to happen over and over and over again? It's almost as if they like that kind of abuse.
Do you think it's that they want to believe in someone, and that once they sort of anoint the person that they believe in, that if they sort of concede that they were wrong about that person, it just trashes their entire sort of conception of the world, and so they just cling desperately to that person, you know, in spite of overwhelming evidence that they're a fraud?
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I don't think they want to admit to themselves that they made a mistake in judgment, that they were wrong. And I think by and large, people can't really do that. And hence, they're able to overlook just about any kind of atrocity just so they don't feel as if they've made the mistake.
I mean, right.
How many people?
And that's,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead. It's fine.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I think that's where the kind of, you know, tragedy of putting so much faith in one person and sort of one charismatic leader. I think that, you know, which is sort of, I think, something we, you know, with this sort of need for role models, it just sets us up for that sort of fall. Because, like you were saying, you know, I don't think anyone can ever live up to that.
I think a smart politician before the campaign starts should say, okay, here's my list of these things I did, and just rattle them off. And just say, next, let's say what he did. And, you know, the next guy will say, well, I didn't do anything. And then everyone will look at you and say, you told the truth.
I think you got some in there. Do you think that would work?
I think it would work. Absolutely.
I do, too. Do you think it'll...
It depends on what
will ever do it, though.
Depends on what the atrocity was.
Right.
Yeah.
But if it's sort of normal political stuff, you know, I think you could get away with it. Just write that up.
We're stepping on each other. You know what? You and I will never learn how to dance together. You'll be
exactly.
You'll be stepping on my toes all the time. It's a joke, Zach.
I was laughing.
Simple joke. But the bottom line of what you're trying to tell people in good advice is what?
I think it's to just try to put less faith in, you know, other people, and to try to evaluate information independently. I think that, you know, in sort of the book, I mean, it is a humor book, and it's sort of a bathroom read and sort of an introduction to being skeptical, I guess, was my idea, was to, you know, look at these former titans of society who sort of everyone across the country would point to and say to their kids, you know, I want you to be like him. And then it would turn out that the guy was, you know, a crook or a drug addict, you know, or now, you know, or a wife beater or something, you know, something awful like that. And, you know, so I guess I just wanted people to have a little bit less faith in the people that sort of mainstream culture tells them are so wonderful.
Do you think people who read this book will be suspect of everybody?
I think it would be good. I think a little more cynicism would do people good. I mean, you know, so I don't think, you know, I don't think you want to be skeptical of everybody. And there's also a cool element of it where, you know, one of the things that I wrestled with this was, you know, there's still a lot of good advice from these flawed people, even if they couldn't follow it. So, you know, part of it's that you can still learn, you know, and be led by and sort of pick up valuable things from people who aren't perfect.
Well, I mean, people obviously didn't get to where they're going by not being charismatic or intelligent. They just do silly things.
Absolutely. Right. No, totally. And I think that's sort of that's where the fall comes in, is that the charisma gets people too far. And that because that charisma often goes along with, you know, certain sort of antisocial personality traits, that, you know, we end up elevating a lot of bad people because we value the charisma so much.
I think, you know, people will probably maybe question a little bit more, and take things and understand that, you know what, people are human. They're going to make mistakes. They're not gods. Don't put them up on pedestals. And if you treat them as if, you know, you like yourself, you know, they may be a little more understanding.
You know, that's an interesting, that's a good way of putting it. You know, it's funny. I hadn't really, frankly, formulated it like that, but I totally, you know, I think there's a lot to that, you know, that, okay, maybe this guy isn't perfect, but he's still interesting and has something of value. And, you know, do we really need, you know, our icons to be perfect?
I don't think we do. What I want them to be is honest.
Well, that's a tough one too.
I mean, that's the problem. You know, if they were honest, and you know, they told you some of these things, you know, but I mean, how's Bill Clinton going to come out and say, look, I have these affairs, you know, I'm into this, and yeah, and so be it. With people simply saying, oh, okay. But, you know, maybe they would have accepted him had he been a little more forthright.
You know, it might definitely be worth a try. And I think that, you know, the thing that I also found interesting about it was the extent to which these guys sort of often predict their own downfall with their self-help advice. So the quote I like in here that was, when you know what you are talking about, others will follow you because it's safe to follow you. And that was Richard Fult, the CEO of Lehman Brothers in 2006. You know, so he was, you know, 2.5 years before he led the company into the largest bankruptcy in the history of the United States. He was doing a commencement speech at a college and, you know, talking about how, you know, if you knew what you were talking about, others would follow you. And, you know, there's sort of kind of from an economic perspective, from sort of interesting, the number of CEOs who go and do commencement speeches at their alma maters right before they drive their companies into the ground is absolutely incredible. Yeah. I mean, Dennis Kozlowski at Tyco, you know, 6 months before he was arrested, went back to his college and did a commencement speech. And I sort of wonder whether, you know, whether sort of the height of hubris when the person sort of has been consumed by their belief in their own celebrity, and they're, you know, instead of sort of focusing on managing the company or managing the country, they're really sort of focused on building themselves as this sort of icon that seems to very often be the absolute pinnacle, and then it all goes down from there.
Well, you know, things like, you know, Hillary Clinton, for an example, she's going to run for the presidency, right? Yet nobody brings up the episode with her husband when he was the president. They don't bring that up at all. And to me, I would say, so you want to run the country, but you stayed in this relationship, this bizarre situation. Why? I want to know why.
And you do want to know why.
Yeah. And I think we're entitled to know that, don't we? Aren't we?
I agree with you totally. But then, you know, it's like you really want to fly into their, you know, kind of to your point earlier about, you know, with TMZ and all this stuff now, you know, that there's sort of no, you know, these people don't have the opportunity for privacy that they may be used to have. But I agree with you on Hillary.
I mean, one would say, look, this is their own business. It's their private business. It's behind closed doors. That's well and good. But
don't you learn about someone's character from what
exactly.
They're...
These are the people who are responsible for our destiny. These are the people who are responsible for whether we go into war or not. These are people who are responsible for our livelihood economically and everything else. And I think everything they do has a bearing on that, and we deserve to know it.
I agree with you.
That's my speech. Where do we get the book, Good Advice for Bad People?
Good Advice, sir. You know, it actually just went on sale at midnight. So it is on Amazon.com, and it's on Kindle, too. And it looks like it's $7.99 on Kindle. So
that's it?
Yeah, on Kindle, and then it's 11 something in paperback. So
how are you going to make money on Kindle, for crying out loud?
I don't know. I don't worry.
You're doing it for fun, aren't you?
Absolutely.
You're a multimillionaire, aren't you? You're not telling us.
No.
All right, Zach, we're going to come back. One last hour to go. We're going to take phone calls with you. And perhaps if you're out there and want to share a story with us, hey, we'll take it. We'll be back.